It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Here in Illinois, one in four people uses the Medicaid program. Nearly 2 million of our fellow Illinoisans rely on food stamps, which is now known as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. Yet what Republicans call the One Big Beautiful Bill Act will require states to cover some or all of the costs of these programs. They'll tighten work requirements, and they'll essentially reshape who qualifies for help and for how long. So we wanted to ask today, what does all this mean for Illinoisans who might be losing critical supports? Joining us to talk about this is Daniel Perry, Vice President of Policy and Advocacy with the Greater Chicago Food Depository. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us, Stephanie Altman, former Director of Healthcare Justice, currently of counsel with the Shriver Center on Poverty Law. Stephanie, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, I want to invite you to join us, especially if you are on the Medicaid program, or maybe you are or have been a SNAP recipient. Maybe you work in healthcare or in the hunger area. How do you think these changes might affect you and your community? 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, Stephanie, I'm going to start with you. What are some of the big changes we're seeing to Medicaid with the OBBBA?
Right. Thank you. This bill is really going to cause some of the largest changes in eligibility for coverage and the cost of Medicaid and health insurance in history. Many of these provisions take effect over the next few years, but they're going to be devastating for Illinois and across the country. The estimates on Medicaid coverage loss are over 330,000 Illinoisans over 10 years. That's 11% of all of the people on Medicaid. Out-of-pocket expenses are expected to rise, not just for Medicaid enrollees, but people in the Affordable Care Act marketplace. And because insurance companies and hospitals are going to have to, you know, survive by charging somebody for those costs, we might expect to see health insurance across the board increase for everybody. There will be premium increases that are very large for working families who now get deep financial assistance on the marketplace. And as you already mentioned, work requirements are just one of the new barriers to coverage that people are going to have to, you know, jump through these hoops just to keep their coverage, and through sheer, you know, not getting the mail or other kinds of administrative problems, even though they're still eligible, may lose coverage that they're entitled to.
So that's Medicaid. Danielle Perry, can you sort of set a baseline with us and talk through how the big, beautiful bill is going to be changing the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or food stamps?
Absolutely. So we are similar to what Stephanie just outlined. We're seeing the most immediate impact come from work requirements that are put on folks, though we know majority of people who receive SNAP are working people. But the work requirements and the paperwork and the red tape that will be involved in trying to certify that you have worked those 20 hours a week could impact, I believe, millions of people. But overwhelmingly, we will see it impact at least 300,000 people in the immediate. What that looks like for SNAP could be the next 3 months, because people receive SNAP for 3 months when they're not working over a 3-year period. If someone was to, let's say, lose their job today, if they receive benefits August, September, and October, November, they will not have benefits at all. And so we believe that could impact not just the individual, but the family that they're in, which could include children and could include seniors, folks who may be dealing with disabilities. This could impact hundreds of thousands of families across the state.
And just to be clear on that, these are changes. The Medicaid changes are sort of put off, I know that, in the legislation. Some of these things are happening much sooner, I take it, briefly?
Yes, the SNAP changes you could see happen in the next 3 months. We also see a cost share for the state, where the state will have to start paying benefits, but we won't see that till 2027. So the immediate is the people who will be kicked off of their benefits because they can't prove their work.
Okay, we're gonna need to take a break. We're on a fixed clock on our program, so I appreciate you rolling with me on that. And we are going to continue this conversation when we come back. We're talking about the One Big Beautiful Bill, as Republicans and President Trump call it, And specifically, it's provisions that will be making deep cuts to Medicaid and food assistance programs and how those changes are going to affect our fellow Illinoisans. We're speaking with Danielle Perry of the Greater Chicago Food Depository and Stephanie Altman with the Shriver Center on Poverty Law, 800-222-9455 to join us today. 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about that massive piece of legislation that President Trump signed last week. They call it the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Democrats have called it a big ugly bill. We're talking specifically about the deep cuts in that legislation to the Medicaid, which is America's program, I should say a federal state program of health care for people who are poor or disabled or in some cases elderly for long-term care. And also SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the name for what used to be called food stamps. And we're talking about how these changes are going to affect people here in Illinois. My guests are Stephanie Altman with the Shriver Center on Poverty Law and Danielle Perry of the Greater Chicago Food Depository. We want to hear from you as well. 800-222-9455 is the number. Stephanie, let's talk about some of the details. What specifically are the work requirements for people in Medicaid going to be like?
Right. Well, Danielle has a lot of experience with work requirements in SNAP, as she pointed out, and these are now going to be applied for the first time to the Affordable Care Act Medicaid expansion population. So those are people 19 to 64 who don't have disabilities, and the Republicans feel that there should be this requirement that they work. That is generally fairly supported by the general public, but they don't really, it's hard to understand what this really means. Most people on Medicaid, including people me and Danielle work with every day, do work if they're able to work. And that's over 70% of all Medicaid recipients. There's also alternatives to being in school or volunteering. But for people who aren't working, generally they do have disabilities, chronic needs, or taking care of small children, or have other reasons why they can't work. And for the people who are working, what we've seen in the couple of states, there's only two states that have even tried this for Medicaid recipients, and it's largely been a disaster. I think 90% of the people who are cut off in those states for not meeting the work requirements were actually working. They just weren't able to, either they didn't get their mail, they didn't get forms in time, or there was some other kind of bureaucratic snafu where they couldn't prove they were working, but they were actually doing what the bill requires them to do. The state has also said this is going to cause them to change their systems, to hire hundreds of new staff members, and it's going to cost the state so much money just to administer a program to require people to work when they're already working and just need to prove it. So we really think this is going to end up in a large loss of coverage for many people on Medicaid who are doing everything right and meeting all the requirements, but just aren't able to prove it or, you know, get that paperwork in on time.
Danielle, can you talk a little about the work requirements for food assistance? And I know Stephanie mentioned some of the past places. I know Alabama, I believe, was one of those states where I think there was not shown to be a measurable change in the employment rate in the state when they put those requirements in. But what I think to some people, it sounds like, you know, what's wrong with that? If you can work, you should be working to get some of this government assistance. Where do you see an issue with that?
Stephanie was 100% correct. I'd hate to repeat her, but I'd like to use some examples of folks just to caretaker. She described the caretaker. I think a good example could be, let's say, a grandmother who's 62, and right now she's taking care of her grandkids so that her son or daughter can work and feed their family and work and have income. Now we're saying that 62-year-old woman should go to work to get a SNAP benefit and then not provide that free childcare assistance. I think another example will be people who work jobs every single day and are hourly. This week, their schedule's 24 hours, but next week, their boss says, hey, we only need you for 16. That is not a person sitting on the couch and not working. They're working, but they can't guarantee the 20 hours sometimes. And that could be the difference between them getting this benefit or not. And then lastly, I think another example is how will the state manage people who may be self-employed, the woman right now who's in her home doing hair in the basement, or the handyman who comes to your house and helps you out. How will we certify their 20 hours and what will that look like? I agree with Stephanie. I think for the everyday person who's typically working and receiving these benefits, it will be a challenge, not just for the state, but for them to certify these benefits. And what we have found is that this does not incentivize people to work. It creates barriers. And as Stephanie already stated, it will increase the gap of people who are eligible for these benefits and are not receiving it.
Well, Stephanie, so, you know, one of the things that does strike me is I've tried to wrap my head around with this is the idea that, you know, Medicaid, like people are taking up benefits, right? Like it's not like, you know, there was that trope in the 80s of the welfare queen, right? And now I think the version of that is the middle-aged video gamer sitting on a couch in their parents' basement or something, sucking up these health benefits. People will still get sick. They won't get sick. They're going to still seek, presumably, medical treatment when they get that. Can you talk about that idea that it's the health coverage being lost and not the health care, if that makes sense?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, first of all, Medicaid is not, you don't get money, you don't get cash. It's paid to a doctor if you go to the doctor, it's paid to the pharmacy if you pick up a medication and you need health care. So I think some people don't realize there's nothing you're getting. You know, you're not sitting on the couch and getting some amount of money or something like that. Like you said, if you're sick, it's coverage. It's there only for you if you need it. And that's what insurance is all about. If people lose coverage, and we're going to see this much faster with immigrant populations because many are, you know, immigrants who are lawfully residing, who've been paying premiums for years, who are eligible for Medicaid or have been paying into the marketplace, they're going to lose coverage even faster, because many of the provisions go into effect much faster for them. And what we've seen for people who don't have health insurance, especially before the Affordable Care Act, is like you said, if you get really sick, you might wait. You know, you might feel like, well, if I go to the doctor, I'll have to pay, or I can't get my medication from CVS or Walgreens. But when you get sicker and sicker, you're going to go to the emergency room. And it's the emergency room and the hospitals who are going to have to, you know, take you in because that's required. And so, you know, instead of just providing coverage, allowing you to get preventative care, preventing an emergency, it's the opposite. You're going to wait until you're very sick. You're going to go because you have no other choice. You may end up in medical debt. The hospitals are going to have to take you in and perhaps cover you with charity care. And a lot of that, you know, cost is going to be shifted to people who do have insurance. So it's really going to cost the whole system, the economy. Healthcare providers will probably lose their jobs, estimates, and it's just a backwards way of taking care of people.
I want to focus on one of the other aspects of this. I want to talk about is the funding mechanisms and how, you know, Republicans in Congress say they want states to pick up more of the slack here. And Danielle, I understand one of the aspects of the food assistance program is this sliding scale of, I guess, erroneous payments, overpayments. I'm not sure what the exact term is off the top of my head, but if you have, I think the idea was if you have fewer problems, if the money is going where it's supposed to go, you can get more money from the federal government. If you have more problems, you get less. I think that, you know, again, it sounds reasonable to people. What do you think of that?
It does sound reasonable in theory, but as we just said, all of these people will now have to be certifying their work requirements with the state. And I think they're just creating more paperwork and red tape that likely could increase our error rate and make it more difficult for the state to be able to implement this imperfection, with no issues. Right now, we're looking at a cost share where we would have to pay 15% of the benefit here in Illinois, which we've never had to do before. We're estimating that that would be $700 million annually for the state. And that doesn't even include the 25% increase of payments we would have to do for administratively and paying for this program, which we already said on this call so far, we know the administrative cost for the state is going to increase. Increase because the amount of paperwork they're going to have to process because of the work requirement. So I think it's going to be nearly impossible for the state to decrease an error rate when they're having to do so much more work with so many additional people.
And Stephanie, similar question. I think we can probably guess at the answer at this point, but is there any idea that Illinois can make up the slack or the shortfalls in federal funding here in coverage?
I think it's going to be very difficult. I don't want to say impossible. I mean, I think the state will try to raise revenue in some ways. And I know Governor Pritzker has committed to trying everything he can to help the people of Illinois face these cuts. But as he said, I think a few times, the loss of $50 billion over for the state over a 10-year period is pretty insurmountable in terms of us being able to cover that, save rural hospitals, be able to keep everyone on Medicaid, being able to hire all the state workers, all the things that we've talked about. I don't think we'll be able to necessarily make it up. I do know that we have time to plan. I don't want people to feel like it's hopeless. And as Danielle said, it's a lot of money that needs to be raised, but I do think that our state legislators and our governor are committed to doing what they can, and we do have time to plan for it. And so I'm hoping that we will come up with a plan for Illinois to respond to this and try to help the people that need it most.
I want to share a message. We got Dila from Champaign County called and just said, didn't go on air, but said there not only are the SNAP benefits, but also SNAP education is going away, teaching low-income individuals how to eat healthy, as well as the resources available for the community. Danielle Perry with the Greater Chicago Food Depository, can you talk about that, and maybe just if you have advice for people who are current benefit recipients on how to prepare for some of these changes and requirements that are coming down?
Yeah, she's right. The outreach was completely eliminated in this bill. So I think it creates more work for us here at the Greater Chicago Food Depository and also our over 800 food pantry partners. We will see more people coming to the food depository for our help to the pantries. Right now, I would say we are already thinking about the fact that last year we served more people than we have in the history of the food depository. Last year, we saw 2.4 million families come to the pantries across the county. We saw more than at the height of the pandemic. And so we are bracing
I'm
for
sorry to interrupt you, but to
overwhelming.
what do you attribute that? I mean, right? Like you said, there was not employment rate was pretty good last year. What do you understand is behind that?
We believe that it's from the rising cost in food, just generally. And we also believe that we have seen an increase also after COVID when people received more benefits. When those benefits were rolled back, we saw the number of people coming to the pantries increase. So just changes in benefit, cost of food. And now we're bracing for what will be the record number of people coming to the pantries every day.
Wow. All right. We just have a couple of minutes left. Stephanie Altman with the Shriver Center on Poverty Law. If you take a step back and put all these changes that we've seen, the ones we've talked about today and others in this legislation and in everything that's happening in our government, put that in the broader context of what it means to be poor in America in 2025.
Yeah, I mean, it's harder, and what we say at Shriver Center is poverty is a policy choice, and this bill, Congress has, the Republicans in Congress have made the choice to make people have a harder time living, like Danielle said, harder to buy food, harder to be able to afford housing. It's doing nothing to increase jobs. It's doing nothing to increase employment. It's giving tax benefits for people who don't need them, at the cost of making it more difficult to live every day, in the United States for people who don't have that income.
Stephanie, final, or I should say, excuse me, Danielle, final thoughts from you on that, what it means to be poor in America this year?
Yeah, I think this is likely going to impact people in so many different ways, like not just SNAP. It's not just Medicaid. There will be families who will feel this in so many ways that it will be completely overwhelming. And so the most vulnerable are being hit in this moment. But people will listen to this and think, I don't receive SNAP. I don't have Medicaid. It doesn't matter. But this is an economic driver in our communities. We see $280 million of SNAP go into our communities every month. This will impact everyone from just dollars in grocery stores alone, whether the price of food will increase or the tax dollars for things in our communities that come from the taxes that go in from the grocery store, jobs at the grocery store, the rural grocery stores closing. This will impact everyone. We just will have to see over time how it does.
Danielle Perry with the Greater Chicago Food Depository, Stephanie Altman with the Shriver Center on Poverty Law. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
That's it for us today. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can let us know what you thought about today's program by emailing talk@21stshow.org. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.